On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I recap the seasons for Tyler Johnson and Rodion Skurucs. What can we expect from them next year, if anything? Will those guys be on the roster? All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I'm your host, Josh Bass, here, as always, with my man, my friend, and my podcasting partner in crime, Marcus Barahal. What's going on, Marcus?
Josh, good. I'm chilling. Ready to talk about a couple of Nets. This is the first time we've kind of Voltron two guys, so excited for that.
Yeah, and two guys that... I'm trying to think if you combine their skills as a player, if they'd be really good. Not really. They kind of have a lot of things like overlapping, and it's not like each of them has a phenomenal skill. So it would just kind of be like a slightly better version of maybe each of them today. So I got really excited for a second, but now
It would be a great name fusion though. Tidion's John Rooks.
John. Yeah, I like that. Tidion's Rodionson, or Tidion's Karutson. But yes, we're talking about Tyler Johnson and Rody Kurutz. I think a couple of guys, Tyler Johnson, someone who was almost going to be a Net a couple years ago, then wasn't a Net, and then came and was a pleasant surprise. And then Rody Kurutz, a guy that obviously had a very tumultuous season that kind of was a bit of a bust for a lot of different reasons. So we'll get into that and check out our podcast we did on DeAndre Jordan yesterday. I had a lot of fun talking about DeAndre, and I think there was a lot to unpack there, like there is here, but just different circumstances. But Marcus, let's start with the more upbeat of these two in Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, he was a pleasant surprise. The Nets signed him for just kind of the bubble run and the playoffs. They signed to a minimum deal in June just to finish out the season. So he's unrestricted right now. Unclear if he'll be back with the team or somewhere else in the league, but he played in all eight of the seeding games and all four of the playoff games. So 12 games total, started six of them, was kind of averaging 23, 24 minutes a game. In the seeding games, he was like 12 points, three rebounds, three assists. Great shooting from three-point range, both in the seeding games and in the playoffs. He was at around 39%. Again, limited sample, just 12 games, but still good to see the shot go down. He looked really smooth anytime he had the ball on offense, and he was at times kind of one of the best shot creators that the Nets had and one of the few guys who could kind of get to a spot in the mid-range and up and get a basket. Not the most efficient, you know, overall shooting the ball, didn't bring a ton defensively, but also didn't really take anything off the table and was kind of just like a pretty steadying presence when he was out there. It was hard to find games, for example, where he was like not really bringing it or just kind of like played poorly. Like in every game, he was pretty solid across the board. So I was definitely impressed with him. What did you think from his short stint with the Nets in the bubble, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised. I think it's poetic that he ended his 4-year contract with the Nets after the Nets poison-pilled Miami in the offseason a few years ago. So that was poetic justice. But I think, you know, he was competent. And that's really what you could ask for someone basically off the scrap heap. And I always thought he had a little bit left in the tank, frankly. You know, he's a guy who shot basically 36% from three for his career, and obviously has had a couple of down seasons shooting the ball, but you were going to expect he was going to rebound. And I think, you know, he looked comfortable getting to the three. He could get his shot, whether it went in. That's another question. You know, he's not going to be a guy that the Nets are going to focus on next year if they do bring him back, because if he is playing critical minutes or, you know, has a big part in the offense and something has gone really, really wrong. But he's totally fine as like a fifth guard maybe to have on the back of your roster. You know, he was, I think, focusing more on offense this year, but he obviously has the track record of being a good defender, both mentality and athleticism, and, you know, decent size for a point guard, obviously a little undersized at the two, but You know, I thought he did fine and, you know, was gunning up threes with reckless abandon, especially in that Toronto playoff series, taking just under 11 threes per 36, but hitting them at a good clip. And I think the Nets had built up a lot of goodwill in his mind by, one, taking a chance on him a few years ago and giving him a contract that was pretty outsized considering what he had achieved in the NBA at that point when he was with the Heat, and then picking him up with after Phoenix dropped him and, you know, giving him a shot to play and rehabilitate his value. So I would be pretty surprised if he doesn't at least want to come back to the Nets on something reasonable. I don't know what that is. Maybe like a 3-year, $8 million deal. Does that seem fair to you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's probably made more money than he ever expected to at this point, just from that last contract. So I think it's really about, like, if no other team out there is going to kind of offer him more money, I feel like maybe he'd want to take a shorter deal than 3 years with the Nets and maybe just try to show what he can do as like a off the bench guy on a team that maybe has a chance to win a championship. So maybe it's like a 1 year or 2 year deal. But yeah, I like your point about kind of the goodwill that the Nets have built up. And to your point about he was just kind of gunning up shots. Yeah, all of his per 36 numbers were like career highs in this small sample with the Nets in terms of points. Offensive rebounds, he did a lot of crashing the glass, threes made, threes attempted, fewest turnovers per 36 in his career. So he was playing really, really well for this team in the bubble, especially kind of given where his career had turned to the last couple of years, kind of falling out of favor a little bit within the league. So good to see him bounce back to that degree. It is kind of hard to say like how projectable it is because as I'm sure we'll talk about when we eventually get to TLC, like it was really good when it was good, but it's just kind of a small sample and it's an environment that might not be replicable in the future in terms of A, like no fans, B, kind of no travel and being in the same place all at once. And then also just the fact that Nets team in the bubble was like completely different than the roster that they're going to have going forward. So there's a lot of variables to it, and it was such a small sample size, but he was really good when he played. So I would definitely be in favor of, like you said, bring him back on a cheap deal if that's something he wants to do. But yeah, what do you think about like what he could bring next year? Do you think he would just be kind of like a break in case of emergency guy, or do you see more there with him?
It depends. It depends really how he would be getting minutes. Like I think, if you look at kind of him versus Chioza for minutes, I think he's probably more reliable because he has a more reliable spot up shot and he's a better probably defender than Chioza and has more of a track record. But then if some of the Nets creators go down, I'd probably want Chioza there just to be able to get into more things. But I don't know. I think, you know, Johnson did well, and you mentioned he wasn't surrounded by a lot of talent. If he had more shooting around him, he could have probably gotten to the basket a little bit better. He wasn't really driving as much. It was mainly just kind of pulling up from three off the pick and roll and kind of getting spot up looks as well. So I think he could do better with having more talent around him because he's never been on, you know, he was on some decent Miami teams, but never really a team that had this many offensive weapons that the Nets are going to have right now. Because yeah, so I think he could be a decent player for the Nets. And I mean, is he going to be playing 20 minutes a game? No, but maybe 10 to 12 minutes a game seems reliable, but it's really going to depend on that spot up three, because if he's not hitting shots, then you know Nash is going to yank him out of there, because the Nets, the one thing they need from some of these role players are guys that can dependably hit threes.
Yeah, I think I agree with your Chioza comment. I think I would still have Garrett Temple probably ahead of Tyler Johnson in terms of like who I would trust in that kind of situation. But yeah, I mean, I would feel comfortable with him being on the roster and like getting opportunities, like if the situation called for it, for sure.
The improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. They've got 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut options, and here are their 6 new ones: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. They sound incredible. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. Built Bar is great for the health-conscious person. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars are low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, and great for the keto diet. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off of your next order. Once again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
Yeah, I think that's kind of consensus. I mean, do you see him getting a lot of looks from other teams? I mean, maybe he could help someone just provide stability, but I don't think he's going to be like very much sought after.
Yeah, I don't know. It would probably be a team that kind of like just is looking to take flyers on guys. You know, maybe that's the Pistons, maybe that's the Hornets. There's like, I think there's not that many teams with a ton of cap space, but there's also not like a really deep free agent class. So I think there's maybe going to be money to spend if you're just looking for like lower tier guys who could maybe get a few million to sign a couple years and just see what they can do. Johnson's still pretty young. He's 28, so there's still maybe some upside there just because he hasn't played in a ton of games. He's only played 70 games in a season twice in his career. So there's definitely a little bit that's still untapped with him. And just given how like solid he was in the bubble, maybe there's a team that takes a chance on him that just kind of needs just a body, frankly, to throw out there. So I don't know. I could see it, but if not, I would definitely take him back on the team. Could
maybe Philly is a fit for him.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if he's going to go to a contending team, he would maybe stay with Brooklyn, but I could see him going to like a team that doesn't really have a shot if they're offering him a little bit more money. But I think to your point earlier, like the Nets have kind of built up that goodwill with him. We've seen kind of similar things with Joe Harris where like, I feel like if Joe were to leave the Nets, it would be for a team that's kind of overpaying him. That's not going to be a good team. And I think that's kind of similar here with Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, no, that's fair about the contending part. Like I was also thinking I could see him back in Miami even just because like, would he have been an upgrade on over Kendrick Nunn in the finals? Probably, I think. But you're right about that. Like maybe he wants to go somewhere like a rebuilding team just to get minutes, you know, kind of a guaranteed rotation spot and then go from there and kind of rehabilitating his value. But I don't know, for Tyler Johnson, like if you're him, you're basically an undrafted guy out of Fresno State, the pride of Grand Forks, North Dakota. He's made $50 million in his career already. Like, isn't that like, didn't he think they were lying when the Nets offered him that?
I think he threw up.
Yeah, you're right. He threw up. So it's like, for him, he might just be focused on winning right now and or just like playing time, and but not as much like rehabilitating his value because he's probably made like fivefold the amount of money he thought he'd make in a professional basketball career already.
Yeah, that was a great story. It was definitely for ESPN. I can't remember who wrote it. Maybe like Jackie McMullen or someone. But yeah, that was very funny, very like relatable that he saw how much they were offering him and he just, his body like couldn't handle it.
Yeah, that's I heard that's what happened to you when David Locke presented your Locked On Nets contract.
He said, here's the ad reads, just pump some of these out.
you threw out when you saw our Built Bar money.
But I did not throw up when I saw Built Bar because they're
delicious.
They're delicious. It was a Pablo Torre story also, the Tyler Johnson one.
Just okay, it up. Good. Yeah. Shouts to Pablo.
Shouts to Pablo.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we've had a lot of Tyler Johnson talk. On to Kurutz. Give us the skinny on Rhodey.
Skinny is the right word for him.
Yeah. Yep.
Definitely a step back from his rookie season where he kind of surprised everyone. We kind of see that trajectory, I feel like, a lot of times with NBA teams where like a young team kind of overachieves in the first year. And then the next year, everyone's like, okay, this is kind of what they've established. And then they kind of end up sort of in between those initial expectations and what they wound up doing the first year. Kurucs definitely a step back, but kind of showed some flashes, at least to me, in the bubble that were a little bit encouraging just because his whole stretch of like the bulk of the season was just not good. He was up and down between the big team and the G League team. And it really started opening night against the Wolves, a game we watched together, Josh. And he just did not look like himself. He looked passive. He didn't score. He picked up a couple fouls, turned it over, played just 7 minutes and was minus 16 in that game that the Nets lost in overtime. And then, yeah, he was just kind of up and down, in and out of the rotation. It was kind of just seeming like his head wasn't really there. You know, he had the sort of off the court incident that happened in, I believe, September of 2019. And so that was definitely sort of a distraction off the court. Obviously, you know, we talked about that at the time. And, you know, if more news comes out about it, I'm sure we'll update. But, you know, a situation that was really unfortunate. And obviously the focus needs to be off the court and just making sure that everything is all right in terms of the victim in that case. But it definitely on the court as well affected his performance. And yeah, he was just, he was not himself. And then the bubble came around and he kind of started to show flashes. His 3-point shot came around a little bit. He kind of improved it on the season as a whole. He had a nice well-rounded game against the Kings in the seeding games, where he was chipping in some rebounds, some assists, some steals, bringing good energy, shooting with a lot more confidence. I think being on a team that was probably not as stacked talent-wise helped with that. He was getting more looks, getting more playing time, played 30 minutes in that Kings game. So definitely ended the season on a positive note after what was just like a real down year for him up until then. Josh, I guess my big question for you would be, what do you think his role on this team could be heading into next year? You know, this year it seemed like there was a clear path to playing time for him with KD out and Taurean Prince really the only guy kind of at his same position, and that didn't work out. And so now you get KD back. Wilson Chandler's not missing 25 games at the start of the season, which was an opportunity for him last year as well. And so it seems like he's a little bit more blocked this year. So do you think he is going to be a factor for the Nets this year?
I mean, I would hope so. I would hope he was able to at least, you know, kind of get back to where he was after his first season and where there was a lot of positive vibes. But, you know, I think for what we were excited about in his rookie year was that he was, you know, a good athlete, but he made things happen when he was on the floor. A lot of just like positive energy, you know, not the best 3-point shooter by any stretch, but, you know, showing enough touch there. And regardless of whatever you would want to say about him, a confident player. And then that this next season, he just had none of that confidence. I think even at the start, like those first five games, it was just obvious that, you know, he was in his head, and that probably had to do with, you know, missing time because of the trial and kind of all that weighing down on him. But he was just like, would catch the ball at the 3-point line and just like travel or double dribble and look totally lost. And some other stats I want to throw at you. In his rookie season, he had a dunk every 27.5 minutes of on-court action. Last year, one dunk every 49 minutes. And that's like kind of just an athletic indicator and, you know, an activity one. And for him to basically be half of what he was, it's surprising for me. But, you know, can he be an important part of this Nets team? I think absolutely. I think his energy is can be very infectious. He's a low-usage guy. He can make things happen when he's at his best. You know, I think I still have faith that he's going to become a decent 3-point shooter, kind of 36-37%. And for a guy that like him, that's going to be surrounded by so many offensive weapons, he's going to get some wide open looks. So if he can knock that down and just kind of be one of the players on this Nets team that's willing to take some of the tougher assignments, because the Nets need size at the 3 and 4. And he's one of the few guys they have that can provide that. That's not like KD and a superstar. So if he's willing to kind of do the dirt, the little things, the dirty things, take some of those tougher assignments, be a pest to some of the other team's players and kind of get in their head, then he can be an important part. But he's really going to need a round of his offensive game because, you know, this year he definitely struggled. His, you know, kind of floater game is basically non-existent. He shot horrible. He's shooting 29% from 3 to 10 feet in his career, which is terrible. He didn't make a single shot, Marcus, from 10 feet to the 3-point line this entire season.
Jesus.
Basically because he doesn't take any of them, because he has absolutely no faith in his mid-range game or floater game. And that basically leads to, if he's getting inside the 3-point line, if someone runs him off it, it's going to be either a finish at the rim or a charge, because he doesn't know how to stop and pop. He doesn't have any kind of, you know, moves really to go around the defender. He's not much of a passer at this stage, even though I think he could have feel for it. He's basically relying on others to create his offense for him. And it showed, because 97% of his 3-point field goals were assisted this year. and 80% of his two-pointers were assisted, up from 59% last year. So he basically can't create anything for himself, which is maybe not the worst thing in the world, because you don't want guys kind of, you know, going off on their own and trying to ISO when they're like the ninth best ISO guy on the team. But you do want someone that's going to be able to create for themselves in advantage situations and be able to make the right play on, you know, 4-on-3 opportunities.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan, and if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn today. If approved, you'll get $50 off of your first month of ED treatment, a free online visit, and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOn for $50 off your first month of ED treatment. GetRoman.com/LockedOn.
Yeah, and I feel like the stat that you said about his dunk rate going way down is, like, that's not a stat that anyone would, like, talk about or really know, but that really indicates to me where his effort level was and where his energy level was, because so many of his points in his rookie season came off of getting a steal, pushing it in transition and dunking, or pump faking from three, driving and, like, kind of getting past the defender, getting a step on them and throwing down a quick one-handed dunk. And he just wasn't really doing that this year. To your point also about, like, shot selection, not having any kind of game, over 85% of his shots were either threes or at the rim, which, yes, that's, like, very analytically friendly and, like, out of a role player, that is to a degree what you want, but that ratio, that number is way too high for me. Like, to your point, I can, like, picture so vividly him just driving from the 3-point line, Kyle Lowry slides in and it's a charge going the other way. Like, I feel like that happened countless times because he didn't have a floater. He, to your point also, isn't that great of a passer. He had some nice little shovel passes inside, but it just wasn't frequent enough. And yeah, for a guy who so much of his game is energy, quickness, confidence, and length, the length is always going to be there. The quickness should always be there. It's really, he has to bring the energy and the confidence, because those are that's half of his game, and it's, like, very controllable. Like, if he does those things, he can contribute and he can be successful on the floor. And there's games where he's out there and he's not really shooting well, he's not really scoring, but he's having a positive impact because of those energy plays. And he's like Chioza, kind of getting the team out in transition, pushing the ball and, like, just kind of making things happen. And when he's not locked in mentally, like, he's not talented enough to overcome that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the forward version of Chioza is a really good comparison. And we've also seen something very similar with, like, superstar led teams, where if it's a young player, like, regardless of if it's going to be important for their development, when it gets to, like, crunch time in the playoffs, if the superstars don't have faith in you, you're really not going to see the floor. And coaches especially, maybe it's different for Nash because he's a first-time coach and, you know, obviously a very cerebral guy as opposed to being, you know, more of an old-school type, like a, I don't know, like a Lionel Hollins. He might be willing to give these guys chances, but things need to be buttoned up then. And you can't have guys just, like, you know, traveling or just not even hitting the rim on threes. So the Nets definitely have vets like Garrett Temple or Wilson Chandler, if they retain him, that can take Kuritz's minutes. So it's not guaranteed that he's going to have a rotation spot for the entire year. I think I'd like to see him be at least in the rotation to start, you know, obviously with a smaller role, maybe 12 to 15 minutes a game, and work his way up from there if he can prove himself. But, you know, if it doesn't work out for him this season, he's probably not going to be on the team by the trade deadline.
Yeah. And I agree. I would like him to get another shot just because the flashes that we have seen have been really encouraging. And he's a guy that I think could fit with the group that the Nets have, just like low usage, do the little things, do the dirty work. Like, that's exactly what this team needs. Maybe bring some defense at the three or the four spot. Like, he fits really well. It's just a matter of, like, making sure he's locked in and at the same time, not, like, overly locked in. Cause there's also times where he's, like, getting into little scuffles, getting, like, distracted on the court, where maybe he's, like, too juiced up. So, like, it's about finding that balance. I feel like Steve Nash maybe could help with that. And yeah, all those veterans that you mentioned, KD, like those guys, if they are able to like make sure that he's focused and he's doing what he needs to do, he could definitely contribute for this team. And so, yeah, it'll be about like how much they want to put into how much effort and time and energy they want to put into making him sort of the best version of himself, and if they think that's worth it in the end.
Yeah, but I don't know. I do think the Nets don't have a ton of shots with like these younger type guys, and they don't, I mean, their draft cupboard isn't barren, but they also don't have a ton of capital because they did, you know, overpay for the Taurean Prince, the mm-hmm. Taurean Prince trade. So I don't know. I feel like when, and Musa, I think we both agree that he's not going to be anything in this league. Yeah. So when you do have guys with like some promise and ability to round out into role players, and you're a team that's going to be basically be capped out for the foreseeable future, I think it is important to develop them, but you know, that's in my ideal world. And my ideal world wasn't giving DeAndre Jordan a $40 million contract. So, you know, it's out of our control as fans. And I think there's always going to be the disconnect there between kind of the fans and what's actually going to happen just based on reality and of management and come and them managing the personalities of all these superstar players.
Yeah. And like, I mean, he's making less than $2 million this year, and they have a team option for the following year at about the same price. So to your point, like if they can get him right for this season and next season, like that's a huge asset to have a guy who could contribute, who's making basically nothing compared to the overall cap. So a really important piece, despite the fact that he's probably not going to play very much, but he, like you said, he's one of the few spots where they could kind of get sort of a bargain on the contract they have him for.
Yeah. And this is a good spot for him also, because he's a player with promise, but he obviously is never going to be even close to like a primary scoring option on a team. So it's like, if he was on a really bad team, like what is he going to do for them? It's almost like he kind of got in a good situation by being on a Nets team that obviously was very competitive last year, you know, less so this past year, but will be the next couple years, because you could have very easily seen him getting picked by like a Charlotte or a Washington. And it's like, okay, this guy has some interesting skills, but he's just going to be, you know, like the sixth or seventh man on a lottery team. So this is a big opportunity for him, and he definitely should not squander it, but we'll see what happens. And I think we're definitely rooting for him.
Yeah. And to that point, like he definitely could be out of the league in a couple of years if he isn't able to get it right. So
yeah,
definitely hope that's the case.
Over under 0.5 all-star games for Rudy Gobert's.
I think I'm going to have to take the under, but it'll be close. I think he'll get close to that point.
It's close. I was very disappointed he didn't make the rookie sophomore game last year after
I was too, a
strong showing in his rookie year.
Yeah.
Okay. I think interesting role player discussion today, Marcus, on Tyler Johnson and Rhodey Kurucs, guys that, you know, if neither of them pan out, then the Nets could be hurting for some depth, but, you know, definitely could use at least one of these guys to pop and be a steady cog for the Nets. And especially with a team like they have, where there's going to be a lot of guys that are injured and resting and cycling in and out. So it's important to have, you know, I'd say a strong 10 or 11 guys that can at least give you good efforts on a nightly basis. And I think we do the same as well. We always try to give strong efforts on a nightly basis. That's going to be it for us today. Marcus, who do we have coming up next?
We've got a big one, Caris LeVert. After a few role players in a row, we're back to one of the Nets stars. So definitely excited to talk about Caris very soon.
Yes, we will be back in your ears in the next couple of days. We got Caris, we got TLC. Those are our two big ones. And then we have Taurean Prince after that. So we'll be lacing into him. But excited for Caris. Obviously, one of the more intriguing ones. One of the guys who really was able to raise their profile in the bubble. So we'll break all that down. And of course, you can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, give us a rating and review, and follow us on Twitter. I am at @JMBass_. Marcus is at @MarcusBarahal, BARAHAL. And the podcast is at @LockedOnNets. And until next time, be well.
Bye.